Who enjoyed the relationship series that we had over the last 6 weeks? I think we done relationships. So deep dive, it's all online somewhere. So go and check it out if you missed that. I just wanted to shout out again, Peter and Jenny Aspen, who were on our panel last week. Thank you so much. You guys were amazing. The number one feedback I got was, I cannot believe they've been married for 45 years. They don't look like there's any way they could be married for 45 years. But we are so grateful to have that depth of wisdom that you guys were able to share with us last week. That was really great. And this evening, we're changing gears a little bit. We're on the road into Easter. Obviously, next week, we've got our Easter Spectacular, which is going to be amazing. It's always a really powerful portrayal of the Easter story, again through multimedia and through music. It's really a powerful moment to reflect and journey through the Easter story. But tonight I want to probably look at some of the events that happened in the lead up to even that. First of all, I want to be a little bit honest about something. I made a blunder the other day. Has anyone ever made a blunder? Whoa. I'm really in the wrong crowd tonight. Everyone here never, ever messed up. Everyone's like, nah, we're good. We get this right all the time. So my wife joined a gym, Talitha joined a gym, and she's been loving it, and she's been doing heaps of different classes. And the other day she did one, which she has explained to me what it is before, but I obviously in the moment forgot. And she went and did Pilates. Is anyone familiar with Pilates? Okay, sweet. This is going to, hopefully you'll understand how offensive what I said was. She went to Pilates. She came home. I was like, oh, how was it? And she's like, it was great. And then I said, do you feel all stretched up now? Thinking that Pilates is like yoga, like a stretching thing. And again, anyone who's done Pilates will know how offensive that is to have just done like a full body workout and have someone go, you're feeling nice and limber, you're feeling nice and stretched up. And she kind of looked at me and she said, you know, it's not just stretching, right? It's actually a workout. And I was like, oh, you know, trying to backpedal as fast as I could. Like, I'm sure there was some stretching, you know, like, oh, when you have a good workout, you feel kind of stretched up. And I made a bit of a blunder, and it kind of proved my absolute ignorance of what she had just been through and endured and pushed herself through. And it kind of, I think, it highlights the point that it's often a lot easier to understand something or someone when you've had the same experience, right? I have never done Pilates, so I have no clue what happens in a Pilates class. But it's true in life that it's so much easier to understand, to relate with, to have compassion for, to be empathetic towards someone who's gone through the same thing that we've gone through. Can you recognize that in your life? It's why some things that you see in the news or on social media, some things just get you and grab you. And often what it is that you're relating with something that you really understand. It's easier to understand and empathize when someone's had the same experience as us. As a way of highlighting this, I knew someone who had gallstones recently. And as I heard them tell people about that, if people hadn't experienced that, their response was like, oh no, that sounds bad. Like, dang, sorry you got gallstones. If anyone had gallstones, they were like, oh my goodness, it was the worst pain I have ever experienced. And there was this immediate bonding over the shared experience of this is the most pain you can ever face. But for people who haven't experienced that, it's so hard to relate to. Like, I don't really, I want to understand, I want to be sympathetic, but I don't quite understand. But anyone who had experienced, their response would be like that. I know, right? Turn the person beside you and say, I know, right? I know, right? You know, if you know some things, you know. For example, if you've ever been to Baker's Duck and I said to you, the pastries are delicious, you would say, I know, right? Like, how good? Who's been to Baker's Duck? How delicious? If I was to say, Top Gun is such a great movie, a lot of people would be like, I know, right? Especially if you're an engineer. You would be like, yes, I love planes. If I was to say, you need to get on the KFC app, it's unreal, you would be like, I know, right? Also, don't get on the KFC app, it's dangerous. It's a gateway to really poor eating because you can get like two meals for the price of one. So don't, not sponsored, but KFC, if you're listening, chuck us a sponsorship. I'm sure we can work something out. If I was to say, it's really unfair how Gabe can go to the op shop and come out looking like he's been dressed by a designer, everyone would say, oh, no, right, it's unfair. He's wearing a cravat tonight. And how's he look? Is that a cravat? What is that, a scarf? It looks so good. If I was to wear that, people would be like, stay clear of that guy. It's unfair. But if, when you understand something, you're able to empathize with it. You're able to relate to it in a whole different way. The opposite's also true. It can be really hard to understand or relate to someone when you haven't had the same experience. Josh and I were speaking before about Manchester United in the soccer, just losing every game. Josh, big fan of soccer. He's probably somewhat heartbroken by this. And I was kind of like, oh, I want to relate to you, but isn't it just a game? Like, which he assured me is the worst thing you can say to someone who's upset about something. We're the sports people, and someone's like, it's just a game. Like, don't get so upset about it. Like, if you haven't been through the same experience as someone, it can be really hard to relate to. And what a conclusion I want to draw from that this evening is I think it's really important that we, when we're thinking of Jesus, we remember his humanity, not just his divinity. We remember that Jesus was fully human, not just fully God, if that makes sense. Now, I want to totally affirm the divinity of Jesus. He was God, okay? But also, the Bible says he was man. He was God in flesh. And why this matters is if we get distracted by just picturing him as some divine being and forget that he was human too, it can kind of lessen what he achieved because he was God, right? Like, it can be easy to just dismiss what Jesus did because he was God. Like, he could forgive because he was God. He could turn the other cheek because he was God. He could love unconditionally because he was God. Sometimes I know in my imagination, the picture I have of Jesus is almost like this supercharged dude that things just couldn't touch. Like, did anyone play Mario Kart here? A few people. You know, in Mario Kart, you'd get the star and your person would start flashing like a rainbow. And then like all the shells would just like bounce off you and you'd hit the banana peels and they'd fly out of the way. Like, I think sometimes I picture Jesus like he's on this star power kind of thing. Like, stuff just couldn't touch him because he was God. And he was God, but he was also man. And I think it's really important that in seeing Jesus as God, we don't forget that he was fully human too. He was totally God, totally divine, yet totally human. 100% God and 100% man. And the story, I think, highlights this so well. I'm going to read from Luke, is in Gethsemane. It's Luke 22, 39 to 46. Now, at this point, Jesus knows that his arrest, his crucifixion is imminent. It's upon him. He's already wrestling through, I suppose, some really strong emotions as people want to promote him to like a political king so he can lead this kind of this insurrection, maybe you'd say, like, wants, like, getting the people to rise up and to fight Rome. And he's like, that's not what I'm here to do. And he's been trying to tell people that, but they still kind of aren't getting it. And we see they go out to the Mount of Olives to pray to Gethsemane. And it says in verse 39 of Luke 22, Jesus went out as usual to the Mount of Olives, and his disciples followed him. On reaching the place, he said to them, pray that you will not fall into temptation. He withdrew about a stone's throw beyond them, knelt down, and prayed. And then he prayed this, Father, if you are willing, take this cup from me. And what he's talking about, this cup, is he's like, if it can be any other way that I don't have to enter into death, could we go about it that way? But then powerful, I mean, if we just preach anything, this verse, if it could be any other way, take this cup from me if you're willing, yet not my will, but yours be done. It says an angel from heaven appeared to him and strengthened him. And being in anguish, he prayed more earnestly, and his sweat was like drops of blood falling to the ground. When he rose from prayer and went back to the disciples, he found them asleep and exhausted from sorrow. "Why are you sleeping?" he asked. "Get up and pray so that you will not fall into temptation." And obviously we know the story goes on. He's betrayed by one of his closest followers, a close friend of his that he's just shared communion with the night before. He's beaten, he's mocked, he's tried in unfair ways in a court, and ultimately goes on to be crucified. But I think it's really important what we see happening here in the garden. He's feeling very human emotions. He's in agony. He's under intense emotional stress. He's not just, "These things don't affect me because I'm God." He is feeling it. He's sweating. He's bleeding. He knows that he must die. And if this means, this means so much to us, but I just want to pick up on just one thought this evening. It really means that he understands us. The issue with just picturing God, Jesus, as only divine, only God, is it can be easy to neglect the fact that he really gets us. He actually understands us. He can seem so distant from us as God, but really, in his humanity, he's so much like us. Like, we can feel like, how could God ever understand? Why would God ever care about me? And I think this is how we can really see that God gets us. He understands us. Jesus facing pain and rejection and fear. Earlier on, we see him facing temptation and heartbreak and rejection and ultimately death. He knows the highs of humanity, and he knows the lows of humanity too. And I think that this is really important for us to understand. And I know that so far this is not a super feels goody kind of message. But you know, the problem with Easter is it's not. There's some stuff in there that we actually really have to wrestle with, that we have to actually really think through, that it's not just like, yeah, Jesus has this like star-powered kind of character, just like went dancing into hell and went dancing out. It's like, this was real. This was raw. This was graphic. Jesus grappled with some stuff, but it's so important we get that to understand that he gets us. That he didn't just think, "I'm going to stay far." That he enters into our pain, into our chaos, into our suffering. He understands us. Hebrews 4:15 puts it like this: "For we do not have a high priest," talking about Jesus, "who is unable to empathize with our weakness, but we have one who has been tempted in every way, just as we are, yet he did not sin." Empathize in the Greek is actually this word, sympatheo. I believe I'm saying that right. That's probably where we get the word sympathy from, I think. I'm not a Greek scholar, but I reckon that's a pretty good link to be able to draw between those two words. Interestingly, the meaning is probably a bit deeper than sympathy or empathy are really able to articulate. Sympathy is just like you feel sorry for someone, right? Empathy is, I can feel your pain. I know, I understand your pain. This word, one of the phrases they've put around it to describe it is to be affected with the same feeling as another. Just let that sink in for a second. To be affected with the same feeling as another. It's saying Jesus has been affected with the same kind of feelings that we are affected with. We don't have a God. We don't have a high priest who he's so distant that he doesn't just get us. He has been affected with the same stuff that we have too. And then it goes on, there's more to that meaning. It's like a two-part meaning. To be affected by the same feeling as another, and essentially to respond, to have compassion, to be moved by compassion, which we see so much of Jesus in the New Testament, where he's moved by compassion. He sees pain and he is unable to not respond to it. So this matters because when we go through pain and fear and rejection, Jesus isn't like, sorry about that. Like that sucks, but I don't really get it. Jesus is like, I know what that feels like. When we're rejected and we say, God, it really hurts. He says, I know, right? It really hurts. I know it's painful. I know you're hurt. He understands us because he's been through it himself. So the question of where is God in my pain, he's right with you. He's close to you. When you pray, God, it hurts, he says, in a way, it hurts me too. When we say, God, I don't want to forgive because it's so hard, he says, I know. It's hard to forgive. When we don't know where to go, when we don't know where to take these things, we can take them to God because ultimately, he understands us. He feels our pain like we do. He gets us. But I love that it doesn't just stop there. That God doesn't just understand us, that God actually responds to us. That God doesn't just see us wallowing in our pain and say, dang, I know it hurts. I know it sucks. He actually reaches out a hand and says, let me help you through it. Let me respond to your pain and to your suffering. When it's hard, let me help you through it. I had a car that I really liked. It was orange. It was a four-wheel drive. I thought it was pretty cool. Some of you would remember the Navara. It was all about the hashtag NavLife. And then one morning, I came to church and something broke on the coffee machine. So I went to Bunnings and I spent 50 cents to get the part to replace this thing on the coffee machine. And then as I drove past North Point, my engine exploded. That's all I can say. It was revving up and then it just went and everything in the car instantly died. And I rolled a little bit further. I parked outside where Macca's now is. And I was a little bit upset about that. I don't know if you've ever had something that you like break. It's not a nice feeling. And it being before church, a lot of people from church were driving past. And I'm just kind of standing there with my bonnet up. And I'm like, this sucks. This is no good. And I'm so glad Micah's here tonight. Because Micah pulled over and he came up to me and he talked to me, ended up giving me a lift to church, which was very kind. But interestingly, Micah also has a Navara. Micah also has had some, I can't remember if your engine blew up, but you had something significant go wrong with your Navara. And I thought this was a great example of, Micah probably really understood how I felt because he'd been through a very similar thing that I'd been to. But he didn't just drive past and then when I got to church say, oh, did your Navara blow up? That happened to me too. It sucks, doesn't it? He actually pulled over. And in some ways, he helped me through my mess. He wasn't able to just miraculously fix my Navara. It had to go to a new home. But he was actually able to stop and help me. And I think that that's kind of what we see with Jesus. He doesn't just understand our pain. He responds to our pain. Because he understands, he is able to respond and call us through. When Jesus is faced with the pain of the cross, the pain of the coming cross, I could say, as he's stressing and he's praying and he's in agony and he says, God, if there's any other way, please let it be that way, but not your will, not my will, but your will be done. And then ultimately says, I know it's painful, but for the sake of everyone else, I am going to go through this. His response is not to flee from pain, but it's actually to enter into it, to ultimately show loves, to ultimately show love so that we could see that we are loved by God, so that we could totally understand and totally believe that we are forgiven, that he's a gracious God, that he would sacrifice himself for us. And the second part of Hebrews, which I shared before, where I was saying, you know, we don't just have a high priest, we have a high priest who can empathize with us. It goes on and says, let us then approach God's throne of grace with confidence, that we may receive mercy and find grace to help us in our time of need. What the writer of Hebrews is saying is God gets you, and his response is an outstretched hand. Come to me and find help. Come to me and find strength. Come to me and find hope. Come to me and find healing. Come to me and find the way forward. He understands and he wants to help us through. He says, I know it's hard. Let me strengthen you. I know it looks dark right now. Let me fill you with hope afresh. I know you're struggling, but you can overcome. You can be made whole. You can be healed. This is God's response to us. Jesus, 100% man, understands us. Jesus, 100% God, can help us. And he wants to help us. He responds to our pain. So that's what's happening here in this story. We see God and man combined in Jesus. The question, I suppose, that's posed to us is what do we do about that? How do we respond to God responding to us? And I think it's a bit of a challenging response, because God actually calls us now to do the same. We see in the cross, we have the ultimate betrayal of God's character, of God's nature, humbling himself to be a man, sacrificing himself, entering into pain so that we would understand that we're loved and that we're forgiven, even going to the cross, even on the cross, asking God to forgive those who were crucifying him. We see the ultimate betrayal of sacrifice of self so that others might experience life. Ultimately, sacrificing himself so that we could experience life and life to the full. And then the challenge to us is to do the same. I heard this brilliant quote or this picture of the Bible, which talks about the Bible being a story of two gardens. In the first garden, we have Adam, who goes to a tree, searching promotion of himself, searching knowledge for himself, searching life for himself in his own selfish way, and ultimately discovering death. And in the end of the Bible, we have Jesus going to a tree, humbling himself to death so that we might experience life. It's like the picture of the garden is now complete. Jesus saying, this is what I want humanity to look like. No longer pursue self and building yourself up and trying to, you know, just like get your clout really up. It's actually, I will lay myself down so that other people might have life. And then actually as a result, I find life myself. Matthew 16:25 puts it like this. If you try hang on to your life, you will lose it. But if you give up your life for my sake, you will save it. True life is not in chasing a bigger house or a bigger car, a larger paycheck, a better lifestyle. True life is when I lay down my own agenda to serve others, to love others like Jesus has loved me. When he laid himself down so that I could experience love and life. True life is when I am able to replicate and do that to the people around me. The issue is, that sounds beautiful, but it can be really hard, right? Like, loving people isn't always easy. And Jesus doesn't just call us to sacrifice and love for people that love us. He actually says, you need to sacrifice and love for people who even hate you. Luke 6:27 to 36. A bit of scripture here, but I think it really portrays this well. This is Jesus speaking. It says, but to you who are listening, I say, love your enemies, do good to those who hate you, bless those who curse you, pray for those who mistreat you. If someone slaps you on one cheek, turn to them the other also. If someone takes your coat, do not withhold your shirt from them. Give to everyone who asks you, and if anyone takes what belongs to you, do not demand it back. Do to others as you would have them do to you. And it's almost like Jesus can sense everyone's thinking, being like, yeah, I can do that to people that like me. And then he goes on and says, if you love those who love you, what credit is that to you? Like, why are you bragging about loving people who love you? Even sinners love those who love them. And if you do good to those who are good to you, what credit is that to you also? Even sinners do that. And if you lend to those from whom you expect full repayment, what credit is that to you? Even sinners lend to sinners, expecting to be repaid in full. But love your enemies, do good to them, and lend to them without expecting to get anything back. Then your reward will be great, and you will be like children of the Most High, because He is kind to the ungrateful and the wicked. Just think about that for a second. God is kind to the ungrateful and the wicked. Be merciful just as your Father is merciful. You know, love oftentimes looks like sacrifice. And we've obviously talked through the relationship series a whole lot about how love is not just a feeling. Love is often a decision that goes in a romantic sense, but also just for the people around us. Love is often a sacrifice. It looks like forgiving even when it's hard. It looks like being generous even when it hurts, even when they can't repay you. It looks like showing kindness when they don't deserve it. It looks like trying to understand, showing compassion and empathy when it's really hard to understand. It looks like speaking well of someone even when they aren't speaking well of you. You know, what really challenged me in that scripture is when it says, pray for those who curse you. A few years ago, I had a situation where there was someone in church who'd caused me a lot of pain and had done some, I guess, kind of nasty stuff to me, and kind of, you know, they went their own way and kind of a bit of time went on, and then I started studying, and to get to the university, I had to ride my bike past their house. And it was a big city that we were living in, so it was odd for you to pass someone's house. So I always made note of that's where they live. And at first, what that looked like was a whole bunch of resentment. Every time I would get to that intersection, it didn't matter how good my day was going, suddenly my day was kind of wrecked because I thought that's where that person lives that caused me harm, that spoke about me badly, that talked about me behind my back. That's where that person lived. And I remember this going on for a little while, and I felt really challenged about it. I thought I think I need to actually pray that God would bless those people. And I'd love to be here and be like, so I did that and it was awesome and it's so easy, and I just like was like, God bless them, and I felt so good about it. But in reality, it was really hard. It was really hard. And at first, it almost felt a little bit like, God bless him. Keep writing. Try to focus on something else. And I remember this going through this process of having to choose to enter into some thinking that was actually quite painful for me, because I knew that that's what showing love to those people were. And even though they might not have been reciprocating it, I knew I've actually got to pray for these people, pray that God would bless them. And I remember getting to the point after doing it for probably 6 months where honestly, I was able to pray that God would bless them and really believe it and really mean it. Like, God, I really pray that you'd bless them and that they'd be doing well. And you know, it was funny, from time to time, I would bump into them, often on the train, you know, somewhere that you're not expecting it. And they always sensed like there was a little bit of awkwardness coming from them. But I never felt awkward. I just felt free. I felt like that stuff is not impacting me anymore. And I think that's what it means to actually enter into pain so that we can bring life. And as we bring life to other people, we actually experience life ourselves. There's some things that are gonna be painful to interact with. There's some people it's going to be painful to forgive. There's some times it's actually going to hurt to be generous. There's some times where it's actually going to be really hard to serve because your life is just so busy, it's actually going to hurt. But actually, there's a promise that as we enter into pain so that others would experience life, that I will experience life myself. I think this leaves us with a few questions. First of all is, will we choose to embrace the pain that brings life? To do those things that might be hard to do, but that are ultimately going to bring life to the people around us. Things that might be painful. Are we willing to die to ourselves so that others may experience life and so that I might also? Would we just stand for a moment? I'd just like us to reflect on a couple more questions. And if we just close our eyes, just thinking about what we've spoken about this evening. Just as the first question is, as you picture God, as you think of Jesus, do you see him as far off and feelingless? Or do you recognize that he's close, that he empathizes with your pain, that he responds with compassion? As you picture God, as he, this far off figure on a throne somewhere else, or is he actually seated within your heart, going through life, feeling the pain, calling you through it into all that he has for you? How do you see God? And the second question, and this might be the harder one, is, am I determined to reflect Christ's love to those around me, even when it requires sacrifice? Am I determined, am I willing to actually show God's love to people around me when it costs me, when it's a sacrifice, when it hurts because I'm showing love to someone who's hurt me? Am I willing to be like Jesus, who offered himself up as a sacrifice, who entered into pain so that we would know that we're loved? Jesus, we thank you for your sacrifice. We thank you for your love for us. We thank you that you're not a distant, feelingless God, that you choose to be close with us, that you understand us so fully, and that you call us through pain into future, into life. God, I pray you would help us to reflect that to the world around us, a self-sacrificial love where we lay down ourselves so that others may experience life. In Jesus' name, amen.